जय राधमाधव कुंज बिहारे,
The following is a class on the nature, the enjoyer and consciousness, a summary study of 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is, given by His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami, recorded on 28th December of 1997.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
चैतन्य मनोव्यस्तं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयां ददाति स्वापदन्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवनश्च श्रीरूपं सगजतं सहागिना रघुनाथन्वितं थं सजैव सद्वैतं सुवधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहागिना ललिता श्रीविशाखानितंश्च। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवशरि गौरभक्तवृन्द, हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा। So ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome all of you to the fourth day of the third part of our lecture series on the Bhagavad Gita. So today, which chapter are we supposed to discuss? 13th. They say 13th is an unlucky number, but in relationship to Krishna, it's always auspicious. So yesterday we had discussed the 12th chapter, and just to summarize for the benefit of those who were not here yesterday, in the 12th chapter we discussed devotional service. In the 12th chapter we saw how keen Krishna is to bring everyone back to Him. I have used the word keen because we see that in this chapter Krishna tries so hard to tempt us to engage in devotional service, isn't it? He has given us so many alternatives. First is, you give your mind and intelligence to me. If you can't do that, then you can follow the regulative principles. If you cannot do that, you can work for me. If you can't do that, you can renounce the fruits, but do something for me. So, in this 13th chapter, which is called Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness, we see that there's information about Prakriti, Purusha, the knower of the body, and the goal of knowledge. This 13th chapter begins with Arjuna presenting certain questions to Krishna. This is the process of spiritual enlightenment. And you will see that Krishna, when he is replying to Arjuna's inquiry, Krishna is even quoting from the Vedanta Sutra, from the Vedas, to give the response. That means that spiritual knowledge is all based upon authority. It is not that anybody can just concoct something. So Arjuna vacha, prakatim purusham chaiva shetram shetragam evacha ethad veditam icha me jnanam jineyam chakeshava. So this is Arjuna's question. My dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, Purusha, and the field, and the knower of the field, and of knowledge, and of the object of knowledge. So this is Arjuna's question. He's asking, I want the explanation of 6 points. The 6 points will become clear to you as we go along in our discussion. So I will repeat again. Arjuna wants to know the answers to 6 points. First of all, he wants to know what is Prakriti. Now you will say Prakriti means nature, and we all know it means nature. Then he wants to know who is the Purusha. Then he wants to know the field, the knower of the field, and of knowledge, and what is the goal of knowledge. Just like there are so many universities and they have so many courses. Now all the knowledge has a certain goal, isn't it? It has a certain object to realize. Then Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam Shariram Kantaya Shetram Et Abhidhyayate Etad Vo Iti Tham Prabhu Prabhu Shetra Gyat Iti Tad Vidaha. Krishna replies by saying, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. So Krishna is replying by saying, this body is called the field. Now, this body is called the field because this body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. Just like we play a cricket match at that field, at the cross maidan or whatever. The soul within the body is entangled. The body is a field of activity for the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is entrapped in material existence. And he attempts to lord it over material nature. And according to the capacity, according to his karma, he gets a field of activity. So, and what is this body? This body is made of different senses, isn't it? We have the knowledge acquiring senses, we have the working senses, the object of the senses, all this will be discussed in this chapter. So Krishna is replying by saying that this body is a field of activity for the conditioned soul, and one who knows his body is called the knower of the body. Then Krishna says, you should understand that I'm also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and this knower is called knowledge. Now, there are two types of knowers of the body. All this will become clear as we go along. I can understand that in the beginning it may seem a little complicated. So Krishna says that there are two types of knowers. One knower refers to the individual soul in the body, and the other refers to the presence of the Lord as the Paramatma in the body. So Krishna is saying that I am also the knower in all bodies, and knowledge is when you understand what is Prakriti, what is Purusha, what is the soul, what is the super soul, that is knowledge. In other words, you may have all this material knowledge. You may have many degrees next to your name. But if you don't know who you are, you don't know that the Lord is present in our heart as the Paramatma, then you don't know anything, isn't it? So Krishna is saying that there are two types of knowers. One is the individual soul in the body. That is the Atma. In the second chapter, we had discussed very thoroughly how the living entity takes birth and never dies, how the Atma is eternal. So there is the Atma and the Paramatma. The Paramatma refers to the expansion of the Lord that resides in the heart. So Krishna says, knowledge is that position when one knows both. One knows what is the body. The body is a field of activity for the conditioned soul. One knows that there are two types of knowers in the body. There is the individual, that is the Atma, and there is the Paramatma. So one is the fallible, one is the infallible. One is the super, the other is the subordinate. Super is the personality of Godhead that is present as the Paramatma in everyone's heart. And the subordinate is the individual soul that is present in the body. Please understand that Arjuna has started this chapter by presenting Krishna with questions. I repeat the questions. Arjuna wanted to know, what is Prakriti? 1. What is Purusha? 2. What is the field? 3. The knower of the field? 4. Knowledge? 5. And the object of knowledge? 6. So Krishna is replying to these questions presented by Arjuna. So Krishna has said, what is the field? The field is the body of the living entity that has senses and which gives the living entity a chance to fulfill his various desires. Now, Arjuna's another question was, who is the knower of the field? Who is the knower of the body? So now Krishna has replied to that by saying that the owner of the body is the knower, and I'm also the knower. Just like you may have a business. So you know your business, but the government knows everybody's business, isn't it? You may just know what about the land that you survey, you own. But the surveyor, he has a survey chart on all the plots of land in any one district, isn't it? So this is exactly what Krishna is saying. Krishna is saying that there are two knowers. Arjuna wants to know who is the knower of the body. Actually, Arjuna did not ask if there were one knower or two knowers. You understand? Arjuna just asked, what is the field and who is the knower of the field? So Krishna is saying, the knower of the field is the owner of the body. The owner of the body is the soul, isn't it? But he's saying, there's another owner also, I, this is the Paramatma, the Super Soul. So there's the subordinate knower and the supreme knower. So we should not confuse this. We must understand that in everyone's heart, there is the presence of the Lord in the heart as Paramatma. There is the Atma, and then there is the body. It is not that it is all one. Just like, for example, we should not confuse the painter, the painting, and the easel. You may have an artist. He's doing a painting, isn't it? And he does it with a brush, isn't it, easel? So it is not that the painter, the painting, and the easel is all one. It's not all one, isn't it? You have the artist, then you have the brush, and then you have the painting. So similarly, you have the Lord in the heart, you have the individual living entity, and you have the body, which is an opportunity for the living entity to use it as he sees fit. One of the names of the Lord is Rishikesha. Rishikesha means the owner of the senses. So this body consists of senses, isn't it? We have different senses, which we will see very soon, a discussion on the different types of senses. So this is the field of activity. Now, Krishna goes on to say how this body is constituted. Krishna says, Rishibhir Bahudha Gitam Chandobhir Vividhe Pratak Brahma Sutra Padeshchaiva Hetu Madbir Vinishchitaha. That knowledge of the field of activities which I have given you and of the knower of activities has been described by various great sages in Vedic writings. It is specially presented in the Vedanta Sutra with all reasoning as to cause and effect. Now please note a very important point. That is, Krishna, when he is replying to Arjuna's inquiry, Krishna is replying to Arjuna's inquiry by doing two things. One, he's referring to the great sages, Rishi. Rishi means wise sages. And then he's referring to the Vedanta Sutra and the Vedic writings. So we must understand that when we want to pursue a path of self-realization, we have to go by the scriptures. If you do not go by the scriptures, then we cannot succeed on the spiritual path. Dharmam de sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Religion means the words of God. So if God is quoting Krishna, the Supreme Lord, when he's answering Arjuna's questions, he's saying, what I'm telling you was told by the great sages and in the Vedanta Sutra. So if Krishna is referring to the scriptures and the great sages, where is the question of you and I responding to our investigations by presenting our own viewpoint? You understand? So if we all follow the scriptures as the basis, then there would be no confusion in society at all. But whatever confusion that we see in society today, it is there because we don't go by the scriptures. Shruti smriti pranadi panchratraka vidhim vina ekantiki hari bhakti utpata eva kalpate. That which is not based upon Shruti and Smriti, that which is not based upon scriptures, it simply creates a disturbance in society. So we must understand that we have to go by the scriptures. Now, this body that we have, it is made up of 24 different elements. Okay? We have already replied by saying when Krishna, that the field means the body in which the conditioned soul operates. Are you all understanding all this? So then Krishna explains the 24 elements that make up the field of activities. The 24 elements that make up the field of activities. First he says the five great elements. Five great elements are Bhumi, Rapo, Nala, Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Everything that we see is made of these five great elements, isn't it? Whether you see a tall skyscraper building or a Fiat car or a human body or an aeroplane, it is all a combination of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Even this microphone is a combination of the basic resources given by God. So, first you have the five great elements. Then you have the false ego. You have two types of ego, false ego, real ego. False ego is the position when you identify with a body. Real position is the platform when you identify with your duty as servant of God. Intelligence. Intelligence is above the mind. The unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. You have goodness, passion, and ignorance. The three modes of material nature will be discussed in chapter 14. When we discuss it next month. Then Krishna says, the 10 senses. Now, 10 senses means that there are 5 senses for acquiring knowledge and there are 5 senses by which we work. Now, what are the 5 senses for acquiring knowledge? The ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, and skin. If you want to obtain some information, how do you obtain them? Through the ears or through the eyes? Or through the nose, or if you want to taste something, through the tongue and skin. These are the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses. Then you have 5 working senses, the senses through which you operate. What are they? The voice, the legs, the hands, the anus, and the genitals. These are what you call in English the 5 working senses. These are the senses through which the living entity works. They are so eyes, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. Then above the senses, there is the mind. And then, so including the mind, it comes to 11 senses. And then there are 5 objects of the senses. Now I'll tell you how to recognize objects of the senses. For example, we have the eyes, huh? This is one of the knowledge-acquiring senses. Now, what do we have the eyes for? Vision. So, one of the objects of the senses is vision. Then, what do we have the nose for? Smelling. What do we have the tongue for? So, form, touch, and sound. These are the 5 objects of the senses. So, there are 24 elements that make up this body, huh? I hope you're not getting too scientific. So the 24 elements that make up the body very briefly are, you have first of all the 5 elements, then you have the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses, the object of the senses. These alone are 15, isn't it? 5, 5, 5. Then you have the 5 gross elements. Then you have the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, the 3 modes of material nature. So this way you have a total of 24 material elements that make up this body, I'm sorry. Now, when you have these elements, there's the interaction of the senses, isn't it? And as a result of the interaction of the senses, what is produced? Desire, isn't it? Hatred, happiness, distress. The life symptoms and convictions. Life symptoms means consciousness and convictions. So all these are considered to be the field of activities and its interaction. In other words, Krishna has explained to Arjuna what is the field, but he has also explained what are the interactions that are taking place in the field. Because when we talk about the body, we are talking about the body with all the different elements. Just like you talk about the hands, the legs, the eyes. So we have these different senses. And because of these different elements, there is the interaction. And because of this interaction, there is happiness, distress, victory, defeat, and so on. And there are also the changes in this body. The body is going through 6 stages of transformation. The body takes birth, it grows, maintains itself, produces certain byproducts, then it gets old, and finally, it vanishes. So there are also the 6 different stages of transformation of the body. Now, Krishna has replied to Arjuna's question, what is the field of activity? Now Krishna explains what is the process of liberation. Now what is the process of liberation? So Krishna gives four verses, text 8 to 12. Now in this 8 to 12, Krishna explains what is knowledge or what is jnanam. Because if we were to examine what the Gita says is jnanam, then you will understand that anything outside of this is obviously the opposite, and that is avidya or ajnan. So jnanam doesn't mean that you just have some material knowledge. Jnanam means that you have some spiritual knowledge as a result of which you can achieve what? The goal of life, isn't it? So Krishna is explaining humility, prideliness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control. So he lists about innumerable qualities which are all described to be knowledge. And besides that, whatever else is there is called ignorance. So Krishna is explaining that essentially knowledge is that by which the embodied soul, who is entrapped in the body, who is operating within the 24 elements, can get out of this body. Just like if a person is diseased, then by taking the medicine, he gets rid of the disease, isn't it? So similarly, a disease is the tendency to use the senses constantly in activities of sense enjoyment. As a result of which, one has to leave one body, take another body, leave one body, take another body. So Krishna is presenting the knowledge by which the living entity can get out of this process of entanglement. And therefore Krishna has explained in this chapter what is actually knowledge. Aham Brahmasmi. We must understand that I am not this body. So Krishna, after explaining to Arjuna, what are the different elements of knowledge? These are in text 8 to 12. It's a very, very detailed chapter, very, very detailed verses in which Krishna is talking about how detachment is also one of the aspects of knowledge. Krishna then goes on to explain further how one can make spiritual advancement. I shall now explain the noble knowing which you will taste the eternal Brahman, the Spirit, beingless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So the living entities are constantly engaged in some type of service. But if he is fortunate enough, the living entity engages in service to the Lord. Now, there's no specific time when the jiva was born. Sometimes people want to know, when did you come into this material world? You understand? So Krishna makes it clear that the Brahman, the Spirit, is beginningless. So this proves the point in the second chapter of the Gita, which was, Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Over here, the word Brahman refers to the jiva, the jivatma, the individual soul. You cannot say that I took my birth for the first time, let's say 50 years ago. The living entity is eternal and subordinate to me. Subordinate to me means the living entity is always subordinate to the position of the Supreme Lord. So we understand that he is Vijnana Brahman, as opposed to Ananda Brahman. Ananda Brahman, Ananda Brahma is another name for Paramatma, the Lord in the heart. And Vijnana Brahma refers to the individual soul within the body. So Krishna is explaining again that A, the soul is eternal. Secondly, the soul is subordinate to me. Now, Krishna describes the nature of the super soul. We have already seen in our discussions previously that the Lord is all pervasive, isn't it? The Lord is all pervasive. So again, Krishna says, everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. Now, this is very easy to understand this example. Just like the sun is diffusing its unlimited rays, isn't it? The sun is in one planet, but at the same time it is manifesting its rays everywhere. So similarly, The Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervasive. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, Galoka eva nivasati akalata bhuta, that the Lord is situated in the spiritual planet of Galoka Vrindavan. But nevertheless, He is simultaneously present everywhere. Thou situated in a spiritual abode, He is nevertheless present everywhere. You understand? So, Krishna is again emphasizing the supreme nature of the super soul, because He is making it very clear by repeating this point, how there's a difference between the individual soul and the supreme soul. The individual soul only knows what is in his body, but because the Supreme Lord is all-pervasive, He knows everything. So if the Supreme is different from the individual soul, this is what Krishna is trying to make. This point is what Krishna is trying to make. Then Krishna shows the difference between the senses of the Lord and our senses. It is not that God has no senses. Our spiritual master once wrote a prayer in which he said, absolutely sentient thou hast proved. So the Supreme is a living being. Just like yesterday we were discussing the 12th chapter, which starts off with a discussion between what is personal and impersonal worship, isn't it? So those who say that because God is all-pervasive, God does not have His personal form, are falsely informed about the greatness of God. So the Lord also has senses, and we also have senses, but His senses are not material like ours. Our senses have limited ability, limited reach, just like you have powerful engines and small engines. It is not like all engines have the same amount of strength, isn't it? So similarly, it is not that we all have the same amount of strength. The Lord has senses, and He is the source of all the senses. Krishna says, Sarvindriya gunabhasam sarvindriya vijarjitam. The super soul is the origin of all the senses, yet He is without senses. So the Lord is the source of the senses. Therefore the Lord is known as Rishikesha. Krishna has innumerable names which are characterized by different characteristics and features. One of Krishna's name is Rishikesha. Rishikesha means the owner of the senses. So in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, text 15, it is being stated that the super soul is the source of the senses, but He is without senses. So without senses doesn't mean that He doesn't have senses, but that means that He does not have material senses. His senses are spiritual senses. He is unattached, although He is the maintainer of all living beings. So the Lord is unattached in the sense. The Lord gives every living entity the free choice to use His body as He sees fit. So from that angle, the Lord is unattached. And He's transcendental to the modes of nature. This we will discuss in chapter 14, the modes of nature, as I've already stated. But the Lord is beyond the material nature. Material nature limits all of us. But Krishna is beyond this material nature. Material nature is working under Krishna's supervision. So you cannot say that material nature is superior to Krishna. Material nature is inferior to Krishna, is under Krishna's control. And He is the master of all the modes of nature. So from this we can understand that the living entity has senses that are conditioned. The Lord has senses which are completely beyond, the material energy. And it is not that the Lord is not personal. Another point that comes out in this discussion is, once again Krishna is proving that He is a person. God is not impersonal. God is not something void. God is a person, a living entity. And that point is actually being made again in this chapter. And the Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because He's subtle, is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, He's also near to all. Now, there's a verse in the Ishapanishad which says, Tade jatita nai jatita ture tad vantike tadantarasya bhairasya. It says, the Lord is far and near. The Lord walks and He does not walk. The Lord is inside everything and outside of everything. Now, these are all contradictory terms, isn't it? How can you say the Lord is inside and outside? How can you say he's far and he's near? How can you say he walks and he doesn't walk? Am I right? But you can say, and I shall explain to you how. When the Ishopanishad says the Lord is far and near, it means to one who takes to the path of devotion, the Lord is very near. But one who is speculating about the nature of the Absolute, like he's trying to understand God through the impersonal process, the Lord is very, very far. You understand? He's very near because he resides in the heart. Just like you may be standing right next to a well that is covered by grass. You may be standing next to a well covered by grass and you don't know that the well is right next to you, isn't it? Due to ignorance. But somebody who is well aware, he may know that below that grass is the well and you can pull water right out of that well. So those who take to the path of devotion with faith, to them the Lord is very, very near. And those who don't take to the process with faith, to them the Lord actually is very, very far. He walks and he doesn't walk. So yesterday we had related that story of Sakshi Gopal, isn't it? And we had told you through that story that to one who has complete faith in the nature of God, he does walk. But one who does not have faith, he doesn't walk, isn't it? So one who has faith in the absolute nature of God, for him the Lord walks. And one who doesn't have faith, for him the Lord doesn't walk. So we must understand that Krishna is inconceivable. So over here again it is being said, although far, far away, he is also near to all. So on the one hand, the Lord may appear very far in the sense that he is residing in a spiritual abode in Goloka Vrindavan. But at the same time, he is very near if we just take to this process with complete faith. So again, Krishna says he is going on to establish how he is all-pervasive. Now it may appear that the super soul is divided. How, just like for example, we are all standing in different parts of the world and the sun is shining on our head. Huh? So it may appear to us that the sun is shining on my head, so the sun belongs to me. But somebody else looking at the sun from a different angle will say, oh, the sun belongs to me because it is standing right above my head. Wherever you go, it appears the sun is right above your head, doesn't it? So although the Supreme appears to be divided in all beings, he's never divided. So it may appear that the sun is divided, isn't it? Because everybody perceives the sun to be right on top of him. But actually, the sun is not divided. It is one sun. So actually, the God is also one. Just like the sun at the meridian is situated in one place. And you may go 5,000 miles in different directions and say, oh, the sun is right above me. But actually, it is that one sun that is undivided. So similarly, in the Vedic literature, it is said that the Lord, although it appears to be divided, he is undivided. So Krishna, even though he is all-pervasive as a super soul, he is still undivided. And he is the maintainer of every living entity. The Lord is maintaining everyone right from an elephant to an ant. Netyo nityanam chetana chetananam eko bhavanam vedati kama. That singular living entity, he is nitya. Nitya means eternal. And we are also eternal. So that singular living entity is maintaining all other living entities. So it is that same point is being stated in this verse 17, how the Lord is the source of everything, how the Lord is the maintainer of everything. So, the Lord is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge and the goal of knowledge. Just like when sunshine comes, the darkness goes away. So, the Supreme Lord has hands and legs everywhere. And one who takes advantage of his spiritual knowledge, he can actually destroy his illusion. Illusion means entanglement with his body. And knowledge means that you want to get rid of this ignorance by taking advantage of spiritual instructions. So by having the spiritual wisdom, like Krishna has already explained what is knowledge. So knowledge has been defined as that understanding by which one can realize what is his constitutional position. And the different elements of knowledge we have described, humility, prideness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, these are all different elements of knowledge which Krishna explains in this chapter. So the field of activities, knowledge and the noble have been summarily described. But Krishna says, only my devotee can understand all this. Now again Krishna comes back to the path of bhakti, isn't it? Krishna is saying, you can't understand this by academic pursuit. If you're trying to understand this by some academic jugglery, you cannot succeed. You cannot understand God and His inconceivable nature by your material efforts. But to the path of bhakti, you can understand. You can understand what is knowledge, what is this body, and how to get rid of this body. So Krishna is saying that I have explained to you this body, I have explained to you the position of the soul. Arjuna, I have explained to you the position of the super soul, but this can only be understood by one who takes to my devotion. So we must understand that through the process of bhakti, through the process of service to God and glorification of God, we can actually understand God. But if we don't try to surrender to God through the process, then actually we will never be able to understand God. Therefore, it is said that Krishna is very, very far away for those who don't actually take to the path of bhakti. So the path of devotion, which is the underlining theme of this Bhagavad Gita, is the path by which we can get a complete understanding about God. Material nature in the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformation in the modes of matter are products of material nature. So again, Krishna is saying, this material nature has been existing since times immemorial. And the living entity is eternal, and this material nature is also eternal. Even when the material nature gets annihilated, again, it is created. So because it is created and annihilated again and again, it is said that this material nature is actually eternal. Now, why is it that the living entity suffers? Why is it that he suffers? So Krishna explains that the living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyment in the world. It is not by accident that one person gets a birth in a rich man's family, another gets a birth in a poor man's family. You understand? This is not by accident. Krishna is saying that the living entity is the cause. Very often people want to know who is the cause. Why is it that this man is born with a deformed body? Why is it that this man has to go through this suffering? Why is it this man has cancer and another man is healthy? Why, isn't it? So that is being explained by Krishna over here. He says that actually material nature is not the real cause. Material nature does not enjoy or suffer. But it is the living entity that is responsible for our suffering and happiness. This means that the living entity by his actions has the freedom to act properly or improperly. If he acts properly, then he's lifted to higher levels of life. Just like we've explained, there are 8,84,00,000 different species of life, huh? There are species that live in water that total nearly 9 lakhs. There are species that live on land but cannot move that add up to 20 lakhs. There are those that fly in the sky. There are those that belong to the insect category. There are 30 lakhs that belong to the animal category. And there are how many that belong to the human category? 4 lakh species that belong to the human category. So the living entity is the cause of suffering and enjoyment, just like I'm operating as a free citizen of this country. So in that capacity, I am going to determine, I'm going to determine what my suffering or happiness is going to be. If I follow the laws of the state, for example, then I will not be touched by the police force. And if I don't follow the laws, then I become liable for being punished. So the living entity is the cause. We cannot say if there is some suffering, oh, God doesn't like us, my stars are not good or whatever. It is our action. Therefore, the Vedic scriptures are saying again and again, correct your action, act properly, so that we don't waste this human life. And we should also remember that in this human body, there is nothing but distress, and the nature of this material existence is that can end at any moment. So this human life can end at any moment. Therefore, we have to rise above the three modes of nature, rise above the three modes of nature and come to the platform of devotional service. So, based on how we act, future will be decided. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that Devahuti asked Kapila Dev a very simple question. She said, my dear son, you have just explained that the soul doesn't die and the living entity is moving on from one body to another body. So can you please tell me how is the next life going to be decided? So Kapila, they replied by saying, Karmana deva netrena jantu deho papate striya pravishto dharam pum sureda kanashrayaha. He said, based upon the karma that the living entity performs, which are all witnessed by different living the demigods, and the soul enters through the semen of the male into the womb of the female, the living entity gets a different type of body. So there are several witnesses to the various actions that you and I are performing. Karmana deva netrina. Netrina means eye. Deva means demigods. So there are many demigods watching everything that you and I are doing. There is the Lord in the heart. That is one witness. Then there is the sun or the moon. Because anything you do is either in the day or in the night, isn't it? Even if you close all the four walls and you think, oh, nobody's watching it, but the Lord is watching it. Then you have the air god, the stars. So all of them are watching. And you and I may make a mistake. Our IBM computer may make a mistake. But the demigod's computers never make a mistake. So they're all keeping a track. And based on that, our future is going to be decided. Sometimes people say, I'm such a pious man and I have to go through all this suffering. And look at all those impious people, they're living like kings, driving Cadillac cars, and that man's doing everything dirty and nothing's happening to him, and I'm an honest man and I have to go through my suffering, isn't it? So how do you explain this? This also finds an explanation in the Vedic scriptures. If the living entity is getting some happiness now, that happiness has been obtained due to his past pious record, some service he's done in the past, and therefore he's enjoying or reaping the fruits of his past karma. But what he's going to do now is determining his future. So the past karma is going to run out. Father may have left a big fortune for me. But if I don't invest this fortune properly and I just squander the money, then very soon I'll become bankrupt, isn't it? So we must understand that the living entity is determining his future. Now if you say, who knows about the future? Then of course Krishna says, for the doubting soul there's no happiness now or later. If you're going to doubt the words of the scriptures, if you're going to doubt everyone, then you can never be happy. If the child is always doubting everything that the mother says, then the child can never progress, isn't it? So Krishna has made it clear in this verse that the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyment in the world. And so based on how we act, our next life or future is going to be decided. Now, Krishna also says the living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with material nature. Upadrastana manta cha bharta bhokta maheshwara paramatmeti chap yukto dehesmin purusha para. So Krishna is explaining that actually in this body there's another enjoyer. Don't think that you are the enjoyer, huh? We all want to think that we are the enjoyer. Krishna says there's another enjoyer. And who is that enjoyer? That enjoyer is the Paramatma. So once again, Krishna is defeating the impersonalist concept of God. The impersonalist concept is that God has no form and God is all pervasive, so he doesn't have a spiritual form. So Krishna says there's a transcendental enjoyer and there is a supreme proprietor. So Krishna is saying clearly that in this body, the bhokta, there's another enjoyer. And that enjoyer is me. And he is the overseer and the permitter. Now, permitter means that nothing happens without the permission of the Supreme Lord. We have all said this many times. Not a blade of grass moves without God's permission. Haven't we all said that? So in this verse, the word is used anumanta. Anumanta means permission. So, the living entity, whatever he may desire to do, can only execute it if Krishna permits it. So if somebody wants to forget the Lord, that permission is also given by Krishna. And if somebody wants to remember the Lord, that permission is also given by Krishna. Because the Lord does not interfere with the free will of the living entity. We have the free choice. So in this verse, Krishna is again establishing that there's a transcendental enjoyer. He's para. Para means he's transcendental, beyond the modes, who is the supreme proprietor and the overseer and the permitter. And another name for him is the soul, is the super soul. So there is the bhukta and the bhakta. So bhukta means that one who is maintained, and bhokta is the maintainer. So Krishna is the bhokta, and we are the bhokta. We are maintained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we must understand that the Supreme Lord is the maintainer of all living entities, and He is present in everyone's heart as the Super Soul. This is actually what we are going to see in this whole 13th chapter. In this whole 13th chapter, Krishna is explaining how the living entity gets entangled, how the living entity tries to enjoy, how there is the real living entity that is the Lord in the heart, but again, how there's also presence of the Lord in the heart as the Paramatma. There's an example given in the Vedic Shastras of two birds sitting in a tree. There were two birds sitting on a tree. One bird was just eating the fruits of the tree, and the other bird was just witnessing. The other bird was just waiting patiently, when will this bird that is eating the fruit turn towards me? So that is exactly how the Paramatma and the Atma behave. The Atma is busy, the living entity is busy enjoying the fruits, and the Paramatma is just watching, just watching, when will this living entity turn towards me for help? So this theme is being supported in this whole chapter. So Krishna says, one who understands this, he applies it in his life. Many people have the theoretical understanding of Bhagavad Gita, but they don't know practice of Bhagavad Gita. The many people who you will meet, they know the Bhagavad Gita from cover to cover, first verse to the last verse, but they don't apply the Bhagavad Gita. But what is important is that you practice the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is saying that one who lives by this philosophy, then he will definitely be able to become free from the cycle of birth and death. If we have this knowledge and we apply this knowledge, then we'll be able to get out of the cycle of birth and death. So it is important that we apply this knowledge. And Krishna explains how we come to this knowledge. We come to this knowledge by hearing. For example, in text 26, Krishna says, "Dear those who, thou, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person about hearing about Him from others." So spiritual association is very important. A person may not have complete understanding about God. He may not know the Sanskrit language properly. He may not have thorough knowledge of the scriptures. But he hears from someone about God. So by hearing from someone about God, Krishna says, he begins to worship the Supreme Person. Because of the tendency of such a person to hear, he becomes free from the cycle of birth and death. So hearing is very important. We have these ears. The ears must be put to the right use. We have the tongue. In the Shastras, the example is given that if the tongue is not used to glorify the Lord, then this is just like the croaking of a frog. The frog makes noise, kank, kank, kank. And as a result of which, the snake identifies, oh, this is where the frog is, and it goes and bites, isn't it? And the body of a snake also has holes. But the body of a snake has holes, but those holes have no value. So we have these ears, and we don't use these ears for hearing about the glories of the Lord. Then what's the value of these ears, isn't it? So what Krishna is saying in this verse is that a person may not be fully conversant in the scriptures. Just like very often in the early days, when our spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, came to India with his Western disciples. The Indians would say, many of the people, oh, you don't pronounce your Sanskrit properly, you don't pronounce this properly, you don't pronounce the Hare Krishna mantra properly. But that is immaterial. As long as one is trying to sincerely glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavatam says that even if there's some discrepancies in the pronunciation, they can be overlooked. So, a person may not be an expert in all the scriptures, but if you have by hearing built up faith and then you're trying to practice it, Krishna says you'll be able to become free from the cycle of birth and death. So, hearing is very important, and hearing has to be from the right source. not just from anyone without discrimination. For example, many people go to Bhagavad Saptas. Huh? After we complete our serial on the Gita, we are planning on doing a lecture series on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So many people do Bhagavad Saptas. But Bhagavad Saptas should not be done just as a means to provide some economic livelihood. Bhagavad Saptas have to be heard from those who are fully surrendered, not professional reciters. Just like if you have milk which is touched by a serpent, you may have cow's milk, but if it's touched by the snake, the milk loses all value, isn't it? It becomes dangerous. So similarly, if we do not hear it from the right source, we can't get the spiritual mileage that we can get otherwise. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, I'm giving this knowledge to you because you are my most confidential friend and devotee. Therefore, you can understand the transcendental secrets of the great science. So, we must understand that whatever is being created is due to a combination of the living entity and material nature. Just like the scientists say that life comes from matter, isn't it? Haven't you met scientists who say that life comes from matter? We say life doesn't come from matter, but life comes from life. Matter does not have the power to create. Matter doesn't have the power to generate. Matter doesn't have the power to move. This microphone is here. If I don't lift this microphone, the microphone will never leave, isn't it? This microphone has been created because some living entity took the different material elements, manipulated it, mixed it, and produced this microphone, isn't it? You may have a very beautiful car downstairs, but unless the driver goes and starts the car is not going to move, isn't it? So, Krishna is making it very clear in this chapter that everything that is moving or non-moving is due to a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. Huh? So who is the knower of the field? Who? The soul. So everything is due to the combination of the body and the knower. When the knower of the field leaves the body, what happens? What happens when the soul leaves the body? The body is dead. So the body can be moved only as long as the knower of the body is there. The moment the knower of the body goes, the body is useless, lump of flesh. So, and the lump of flesh will just decompose and stink, isn't it? So Krishna is making this point in this chapter, that in some respect this point was made in the second chapter, but in this chapter he's making it from a different angle. And the different angle is, Krishna is specifically pointing out what are the different 24 elements that make up this body, and how the body is moving due to the presence of the soul. So we must understand this very, very thorough, systematically. Then we can understand this. So then Krishna says, what is proper vision? One who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the super soul within the body is ever destroyed, actually sees. So the only difference between this verse and the verses of the second chapter is, in the second chapter, Krishna only made the point that the Atma is indestructible. The Atma never takes birth, never dies. Whereas in this chapter, he's talking about the soul and the super soul. You understand? And in this chapter, Krishna introduces the element of the super soul being in the heart. So, sometimes people may want to know that the Lord is residing in the heart and there's Atma in the heart. Then what happens when you do this transplanting, when you transplant hearts? Has this struck any of you? You know, heart transplantation is very, very common these days, isn't it? So, when they do this heart transplantation, what happens? Atma of A goes into B and Atma of B goes into C and so on? No. So, heart transplantation is actually just like changing the engine of the car or changing the seat of the car. The passenger sits on the seat. So similarly, the Atma and the Paramatma sit on the heart. So just because you change the seat cover in your car, doesn't mean you have to change the passenger, isn't it? So you may do heart transplant, you can transplant hearts, but that in no way affects the residence of the Atma or the Paramatma. Because the heart is just a seat on which they are sitting. So one who understands who is the Parameshwar, who is the proprietor of the body, who understands that the body, the soul doesn't die, the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul doesn't die, then actually he actually becomes free from the cycle of birth and death. This point is made by Krishna again and again. And again Krishna says that those who have transcendental vision, they become detached from the body. Our attachment to this body is just due to ignorance. Due to ignorance, I think, I will not die, my relatives will not die, I will not get old, I will not get disease, I will always have my job, I will always have my bank balance, and no calamity will ever fall on me. But one who has transcendental vision, he understands that actually everything is being done by nature, nothing is done by the individual, it is all being done by the nature. And because everything is being done by the material nature, he's not attached to it. He doesn't develop attachment. He does everything as a matter of duty, but not attachment. It is not that somebody who is trying to be Krishna conscious abandons duty. He doesn't abandon his duty, but he abandons the spirit of enjoyment. So he abandons the spirit of attachment. So Krishna is guiding us that we must develop the vision of eternity. The vision of eternity is very important in spiritual knowledge. In spiritual life, in material life, we are all short-sighted. Even though you may make a 10-year forecast for your business, actually we are all short-sighted. We are all short-sighted because we are just making plans for the duration of this life, isn't it? But one who has the spiritual knowledge, he has a vision of eternity. So Krishna says you must develop the vision of eternity. Anditvam nirgunatvat. So anaditvat means vision of eternity. Eternity in simple English means that which doesn't die, which is eternal. So Krishna says, those with a vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So those who have the vision of eternity, they know that the living entity is eternal, he's not born, and he's never going to die, and he can never be destroyed. So this vision of eternity is once again being confirmed in this 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, because there's no question of having spiritual life unless you have this vision of eternity. And there's a very nice example that the Bhagavad Gita gives to show how the soul doesn't get attached to the body. The example is this. The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anyone, although it is all pervading. So just like you may have water, mud, stool, and whatever else, and there's air inside everything. Air is inside water, air is inside mud, air is inside stool, isn't it? But the air is still detached from the water, detached from the stool, detached from the mud. So similarly, Krishna says, the soul seated in Brahman vision does not mix with the body, thou situated in the body. So thou, the soul is in the body. It doesn't get mixed with the body, just like the air doesn't get mixed in the earth or in the stool or mud or whatever. You understand? So Krishna is pointing out that the soul is eternal, the Supreme Lord is eternal, and the soul doesn't get entangled with this body. And he says, yatha prakashat ekha krishtam lokam imam ravihi shetram sheti tatha krishnam prakashayati bharata. Just like the sun illuminates everything, so the living entity in the body is illuminated by consciousness, isn't it? Just like this light over here is illuminating. The living entity is brought to life due to the presence of the soul. It is the presence of the soul that illuminates the body. So Krishna is confirming this point as he is nearing the end of this chapter. Krishna is establishing the point that the illumination in the body is coming from the presence of the soul. And one who understands this process of liberation attains to the supreme goal. So Krishna says you can attain to the supreme goal if you understand that the illumination is coming from the presence of the soul in the body. And if you understand that it is coming from the soul in the body that is not subject to destruction, that is eternal, then naturally you will prepare for the future. Isn't it? Just like the student knows that I definitely have to sit in an exam. So because he knows he has to sit in the exam, he prepares for the exam, isn't it? So when you know that death is the ultimate exam, then you're going to prepare for it. If you don't think that there's an exam, if you don't, then of course you won't prepare for it. So, Krishna, with this we can end our discussion of this 13th chapter. In this 13th chapter we have seen the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the super soul. We must, in this 13th chapter, these are the key points that we have learned. What is the body, the owner of the body, and the super soul? And we must recognize the process of liberation as described in verses 8 to 12. Those were the verses that we ran through very, very fast. And a faithful person, by having the proper association, can have this knowledge and thereby become free from the cycle of birth and death. So we can see in this Bhagavad Gita, as we present to you a summary presentation of each chapter, how thorough the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is, how Krishna is analyzing every possible aspect of our existence just to bring us to the understanding. Please take to this divine knowledge and come to me. Hare Krishna.